Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Oh, wow. I'm having a really, really good time this weekend. This really is a great conference. That's what it's all about. Passing it on to the new person. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. I've really, really enjoyed all of the speakers. Every single minute of presentation, there was value, information that can be transformed into an experience. One of the things that's really necessary for us to all understand is really to come to these things and just, as entertainment, kind of like, it'll make me feel better, I'll learn a little bit, and it'll be great, I'll go back to my home group and maybe I'll sound a little better. Using these workshops like that is not their intended purpose. The intended purpose of these workshops and why Peter and Chris and Doug and Lois and a number of us go around and do this is because we want to share information with you that can be turned into a life-changing experience. This book is about doing. Yes, there's value to learning it. There's value to understanding it. There's value to going to these type of conferences to get different perspectives and maybe a little bit deeper understanding of the material in this book. But we must never forget that this is designed to transmit an experience, not knowledge, but an experience. The difference between experience and knowledge, I'll just tell a quick story. My friend Ray C. Came up with this, and it really makes the most sense of anything that I've ever heard. You own a house, and your two sons, you've got two sons, and one of the sons is in school for plumbing. He's going to become a plumbing engineer, and he's in college, and he's going through the courses, and he's learning, pipe diameter engineering and all this. And, he hasn't really gotten out in the field. He's just really learning. He's going to be able to graph out everything and figure the size that's needed for pipes. But the other son is an actual contractor, and he goes around, and he actually makes repairs when plumbing, goes bad in a house. And you forget to leave your heat on in your winter house or whatever, and the pipes break. And you need to call somebody. Which one of the sons are you going to call? The person who understands it all theoretically, or the person who has practical experience in repairing the pipes? What we need to do is we need to get our own practical experience in this recovery work, so that we can actually transmit it. If we know it all intellectually, but we don't really know it all experientially, we're going to be transmitting that to the people that we work with, and they're going to go on a quest to understand all this stuff intellectually. However, if they see, like the first thing I see with Peter is I see he practices what he preaches. You'll bump into him in the morning and he'll be in meditation or something. He does this stuff. He doesn't just talk about it. That transmits when we work with other people. We are walking big books. And the alcoholic is keenly aware of hypocrisy or being shined on. We can see somebody who's being insincere or duplicitous a mile and a half away. So if we are going to be a channel for the healing of alcoholism and addictive illness, we need to gain our own experience with this work. Knowing about it is not enough. It's a place to start maybe, but knowing about it is not enough. The greatest teachers in my life were the ones that challenged me to change, to alter my behavior, to take some spiritual exercises, to do things differently, to look at things differently. There was one teacher in my life who, I think this is a Zen thing, but every single time I came to the conclusion that something was some way, he would blow that up so that I could move on. I'd call him up, I'd go, Joe, you know, I figured it out. And I'd tell him what I figured out, you know, all proud of myself. And he'd say something that completely blew that spot up. So I'd have to keep searching. I'd have to keep working. I'd have to keep inventorying. I'd have to keep meditating. And he kept me moving forward. And these are the people that were really of value in my life. The people that, you know, the people that told me how good I was, or that, you know, hey, you know, you're doing really great. Everything look, you know, that's nice, that's friendly, that's warm and fuzzy, but it's not sometimes what we need. You know, we need to be in an atmosphere of encouragement and motivation to continue to practice these principles and to move forward spiritually. Stalling out spiritually is not really stalling out. It's a point where you can lose everything with your sobriety and with your recovery. So moving forward, progressing, we claim spiritual progress. Progressing spiritually is of the utmost importance for us. And this book is an outline. It's a blueprint of how we need to work. This is operational methodology for our life systems. This is what we need to be able to grow and to be healthy and to enjoy life and really to be of help to other people. There are spiritual lessons and there are directions that we can take. As well as, you know, these practices. There are many. You know, it says it here, ask some priests, some ministers, some rabbis for some good books. Find the things that really help you grow and expand in your life. But always remember that your operational methodology should be coming out of this. I have seen people get so spiritual, they became no earthly good in AA. You know what I mean? They went off in some tangent where they really weren't helping anybody. They were seeking their own deeper understanding without considering that there needs to be a practice of giving back in your life if you suffer from addictive illness. And they lost it all. They had the robes and, you know, the whatever, and they ended up drunk. You know, so we always need to remember where we need to place ourselves, where we need to be grounded from. And I believe this book is a wonderful instrument for seeing that. And it's also a transformational instrument. When this was written, a lot of people forget this. When this was written for mail order recovery. This was written so that it could be mailed across the country to someone with no AA meetings, with nobody help, no sponsors, no nothing, sitting there drinking, who when they got this in the mail, if they would open it up and if they would move through and actually take these exercises, they would recover and then be able to build a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous around them. Now, we've all seen that it's way more helpful to have someone with experience, you know, go through this and help teach you and help you with the practices in this book. It's much more beneficial. But you have to remember that this book was written for the purpose of transmitting knowledge into a recovery experience if you paid attention to the details. When it says to do something, we really need to do it. Now, this morning, what I want to talk about is I want to talk about the chapter Working with Others. I've been on a rant like the last year or so. And, you know, if you ask me to speak somewhere on a topic, I mean, this is what it's going to be. And it's because I'm discouraged a little bit with the state of Alcoholics Anonymous. If that hasn't come out already, you know, this weekend, you know, you're not listening. We need to be doing a better job, okay? People are dying because we're sitting in our little comfortable groups sharing with each other, and, you know, about what's going on. And there are alcoholics dying, just like it says in this book, all over the place. And you know what? We're thinking to ourselves, well, it's attraction, not promotion. That's a public relations policy. That's not what we're supposed to be doing with our lives. It absolutely is promotion, 12-step work. We're supposed to go out and promote the hell out of this thing. We're supposed to go to detoxes and hospitals and booby hatches and traffic courts and anywhere else where we can find alcoholics who may want this stuff. It's what we're supposed to be doing. And when you do a critical study of the chapter, Working with Others, you will notice that there are more instructions, more tasks being set to you in that chapter than in the chapters before. There's probably well over 100 directives in that chapter. Here's what you should do. Do this. Go there and do this. Do this. Try this. You know, if this doesn't work, do this. And it's the most overlooked chapter in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, just for the same reason we don't have the 12 concepts for world service, because that's about, you know, this complex service thing, and, you know, we need to concentrate on our own recovery. We concentrate on the chapters up to working with others, because that's about our own personal recovery. But the fact of the matter is there are so many incredible promises when you go out and you actually work with other people, when you sponsor, when you take people through the steps, when you become available and you develop a service ethic. Like Peter was saying, your life is no longer your business. You are open to invitation and you are open to opportunity, and you pay attention to that and you show up and you be there. And it becomes part of your walking around this world methodology. I'm going to start reading. There's a second reason why working with others is very important. If you happen to be the hopeless real alcoholic, if you don't do it, you're not going to stay sober. You're not going to recover. Okay? Every single time a relapser comes into the meetings I'm in or to the places where I volunteer, every single time I can ask this question. Were you consistent with meetings? Well, okay. Were you working the steps with a sponsor? Well, yeah, you know, kind of, okay. Well, were you sponsoring anybody? Were you working with anybody? Were you seeking out people that needed your help? No. It's attraction, not promotion. Okay, well, understand this. You are supposed to get drunk if you don't do that. Don't expect surprise from me. Oh, so-and-so got drunk. Oh, just look at the surprise on my face. They didn't give a damn about anybody but themselves. You know, and they were going to the meetings like it was a spiritual gas station to fill up. You know, and if somebody needed help or if somebody came in drunk, they went to the other side of the room. You know, oh, my God, that person might ask me for something. Understand that you're supposed to get drunk if you're an alcoholic and that's your attitude. If you don't get drunk, you got to question your own truth in the first step. Are you really alcoholic? You know, or are you in the wrong place? All right, let's pick up on Chapter 7, Working with Others. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking than intensive work with other alcoholics. All right, let's just consider this for a minute. You know, I've been taught to consider a lot of these things. Ask myself, what do they mean to me? Do I want immunity from alcohol? That's the first thing I wanted when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. So if this is saying nothing will so much ensure immunity, shouldn't I be paying attention to this? This would be like if I'm diabetic, then nothing will so much ensure continued survival than to take insulin. Okay? Wouldn't you be paying attention to that statement? All right, so if I'm alcoholic, nothing will so much ensure my immunity from drinking than intensive work with other alcoholics. What is intensive work with other alcoholics? Is it, here's my phone number, give me a call if you ever get in a jam. And you do that because you know nobody's ever going to call. I mean, how many people are going to call? You know, or they pass around the meeting book and everybody puts down their phone numbers. Have you ever been called, you know, when you put your number in one of those books? Okay, that's not how we're supposed to do it. Alcoholics don't call. We're suffering from so much shame. Oh, yeah, we'll call. Listen, this was Harry from the meeting, you know, but your life seems to be going really, really good, you know, and I'm down in the depths of hell. I mean, you know, it's horrible. I figured I'd call you up and, you know, kind of drag you down into the hell that's my life, you know, for a few minutes. It might make me feel a little bit better, you know. You got a few minutes? You know, yeah, that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to call you because you gave us your phone number. Thanks for that. You know what I mean? God. Or just keep coming. Thanks for that, too. I know what the requirement for membership is. They read it. You know, all I need to do is, you know, thank you for telling me to keep coming. Like it's your business, you know? Okay. And that's your 12-step work. Well, I'm available. If somebody needs me, they can ask me. You know, you're sitting over in the corner with an unrecovered puss on your face. You know, nobody's going to ask you for anything. God. If you're recovered, tell your face every once in a while so that somebody, you know, might be attracted to it. And, yeah, you ever see the old timers in the corner like this? They look like that puppet, you know. You ever see that old man puppet? You're a two-bit shovel. Oh, God. No wonder they don't sponsor. Anyway, this works when other activities fail. What? Intensive work with other alcoholics. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. Okay, carry what message? The message of the steps. We're going to see that as we go through this chapter. The message of the transformational experience of going through the steps. That's the message we're supposed to carry. This book is very, very clear on it. New York is not very clear on it anymore. I had somebody that I'm very, very close to send a letter in, and because he was a delegate, it actually got opened, you know, sent a letter into New York saying, listen, our group is a little confused. Could you define the message? It says we need to carry the message to other alcoholics. Could you just be specific? And the answer that came back after bugging them for an answer for like a year and a half was, whatever your group wants it to be. You know, there's some groups that I've gone to in the last 10 years or so. I don't want them defining my message, the message of my recovery. Oh, my God. You know what I mean? Can you imagine saying, all right, everybody, we're confused on the message. Let's go around the room and let's come up with some messages. Whatever your group wants it to be. Did they forget there's a text? Did they forget there's a text? Yes, New York conveniently forgets every chance they can that there's a basic text. No doubt about that. You can help when no one else can. Why can you help when no one else can? I'll give you a short story from my experience. I signed myself into rehab. Oh, you know. 28 days, oh God, you know, I go in there and I was in detox for about 6 days and they assigned me people to talk to. Now, one of them was this gruff old counselor. His name was Charlie. Kid. And I could just tell he could see right through me. I mean, the guy knew where I was coming from. He was an alcoholic with about 20 years. He had retired from business, and he decided to become an alcoholism counselor. And, you know, the thing that really got me was there was an alliance. They call it a therapeutic alliance. And in the treatment centers. And really what it is it's an identification. Like, oh my God, this guy sees me clearer than anybody. You know, I've been bullshitting everybody out there for 20 years. This guy just pulled me apart, you know. It's like, you know, an identification. Now then they put me in group. Anybody in here ever do group, you know, where you sit in a circle and everybody, talk about how you feel. Well, I feel terrible. Well, you feel terrible. I feel even more terrible. And you're sitting in the group saying, would you just shut up? I want to talk. I feel terrible too. You know? So anyway, the woman who is leading this group identifies herself as, I'm an adult child of an alcoholic. Now, I'm new to all this, right? I don't know what that means. I'm looking at her like, well, I'm a psychotic drunk from an alcohol from a librarian, you know, but I don't start every thing I say with that, you know. What the hell is going on here? And you know, I'm trying to do the group thing. I'm trying to, you know, be honest and, you know, share my feelings. And I'm like, and she stops me and she goes, hold on, Chris. Let me ask you, are you happy, mad, sad, or glad? What? I'm homicidal and I'm gonna kill you! How in the world? I'm an alcoholic. You take every single emotion and you put it in a blender and you turn it on 10, and that's what I am. I'm detoxing. Am I happy, mad, sad, or glad? Are you an idiot? You know? She was not an alcoholic. She was an adult child of an alcoholic. So immediately she was the enemy. She didn't know. She didn't understand. But this Charlie guy, you know, he was like me. So you can help when no one else can. Now, can non-alcoholics help alcoholics? Absolutely. You know, if they learn a little bit about, you know, how to work with us, some of the most important people in alcoholism and in alcoholism treatment, we're non-alcoholics. I'm not saying that you can't do anything, but when you're trying to identify with an alcoholic, you know, right away from the bottle, it's very, very important to have an experience that you can share. And this chapter will show that. There's great promises in step 12. There's a couple of sections of promises. Here's one of them. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see his fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. It's a bright spot of my life, you know. Hanging out with you guys this weekend is wonderful. It was not like that prior to having the experience known as recovered. When I was first coming around, contact with newcomers. I had 3 months. There's some new guy. He's a knucklehead. I hate him. Shut up. Who let this guy in? You know, tell him to shut up. He's talking crap in my meeting, you know. So this is a promise that comes after some work. I'll put it this way, if frequent contact with newcomers is not one of your highlights, you got work to do. Sorry, don't kill the messenger. Perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. You don't necessarily have to sit on your butt in the AA meeting and wait for them to come to you. Now that's fine if there's a handful of people in AA who get asked all the time, would you take me through the steps? Would you help me? And you know, people bring newcomers up to you. Fine. If you're busy, fine. if you're one of those people saying, well, nobody ever asks me to sponsor them, then, well, here's what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be running around, talking to doctors, talking to priests, going to hospitals, going, doing detox commitments, going to the court systems and the judges. That's what you're supposed to be doing. One of the biggest mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I'll risk being a heretic saying this, okay? I believe that Tradition 11 and Tradition 12 need a rewriting. Now, I'm not saying that I don't believe in Tradition 11 and 12. I believe they need a rewriting, and I'll tell you why. So many people believe that anonymity means secrecy. That's a big problem. Oh, I'm not going to go to the hospitals. I'm sober. You know, I'm anonymous. You're anonymous as an AA member with your picture or your last name on press, radio, TV, or film. All right. Anonymity does not mean burying your head in the sand. When it's appropriate and when it's not going to cause harm, we should tell people that we're in recovery. Should we tell them we're an AA member? Sometimes. Sometimes not. But if we're not about the business of sharing with the world that treatment can work and recovery is possible and the state known as recovered exists, the world is going to still think once a drunk, always a drunk. Once a drug addict, always a drug addict. You can never trust them again. Even the American Medical Society lists alcoholism and drug addiction as a chronically relapsing illness. I don't know about you guys, but I don't chronically relapse. That's not true. Why do you think they call it a chronically relapsing condition? Because that's what they see in the hospitals. They see the people coming in for help. They see them at the absolute bottom when they need detox, when they've just crashed a car. They see them at a critical state. They do not see us because we don't go there because we're anonymous. They need to see us. We need to be about this business. We need to be about going to these doctors and saying, look, doc, you know, I was alcoholic as the day is long, haven't had a drink in 18 years or whatever. You know, I just want you to have my phone number. I want you to know that there's a group of us out there. You know, we band together and there's really an answer to this problem of alcoholism. There's really an answer to this problem of drug addiction. Please call me if you think there's someone who might be interested in an answer. This is what we're supposed to do. They call alcoholism and drug addiction a chronically relapsing condition because we're not doing that. Because we're sitting in our AA meetings waiting for them to come to us. And the discrimination and the stigma is really, it's killing us. Alcoholism, addictive illness, is the number one health threat in the country today. You put cancer and you put heart disease together, they don't come close together to the amount of suffering that addictive illness is causing. Yet addictive illness, only about 6% of the people that go in for treatment for addictive illness does insurance companies cover. Okay? And it's because of the stigma, and it's because of the discrimination, and it's because we're not standing up. It's because we're not million man marching on somebody's ass. You know, because we're anonymous. And that's fine because we got ours, but think about, in this chapter, we're supposed to be thinking about where we can place ourselves, you know, where we can be of maximum benefit to other people. When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, find out all you can about him. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. If there's any indication he wants to stop, have a good talk with the person most interested in him, usually his wife. This is the due diligence, you know, for a prospect. You want to know a little bit about them so that your approach to them is going to be something that they may welcome. If you don't know anything about the person, sometimes your approach, you'll say something stupid, you'll turn them off, and you'll have lost the chance to identify with a prospect. Get an idea of his behavior, his problems, his background, the seriousness of his condition, and his religious leanings. You need this information to put yourself in his place to see how you would like him to approach you if the tables were turned. Sometimes it's wise to wait till he goes on a binge. Why is that? It's because when you come to in the morning one more time, you know, and you're sleeping in the car, and you got the DUI summons in your back pocket, and you got messages from the boss firing you on the phone, maybe that's a time you might think about, you know, changing your life a little bit. That's why. If he does not want to see you, never force yourself upon him. Neither should the family hysterically plead with him to do anything. They should wait for the end of his next drinking bout. Okay, you want to get somebody when they're motivated. I think a lot of people in here, probably the majority of people in here, have worked with people. And when they're new and they just walk in, there's a sense of urgency about needing help. I really need help. Okay, there's a sense of urgency. After a week goes by, after a month goes by, after 6 months goes by, what happens to that sense of urgency? It turns into complacency. All right? And then it turns into, why do I need to do these steps? Why do I need to do these service commitments? I've been sober a month, 2 months, just going to these meetings. You know, so why should we get them when they're wet? Why should we get them when they're still a little bit jittery? Because they're going to be more open. It was talked about tonight. I think Chris talked about, you know, getting them when they're really desperate. That's the good time. That's why you go to the hospitals, the detoxes, the rehabs, the traffic courts. That's why you go there, because that's where the people are most likely going to be who are desperate. If there's any indication he wants to stop, have a good talk. Oh, I'm sorry, I read that already. See your man alone if possible. This does not necessarily mean do a 12-step call by yourself. One of the big criticisms in Alcoholics Anonymous today, from the old-timers, and I know a lot of old-timers, people with 30, 40 years, is that there's no 12-step calls anymore. If you talk sometimes to the inner group people who run Nightline and basically the place where we still get requests for 12-step calls, you'll find that it's horrible what they can tell you. These Nightline people can call 10, 15, 20 people before they find somebody willing to go out on a 12-step call. Oh, you know, geez, it's the last episode of Lost, and you know what I mean? And I got to get up for work tomorrow, you know, and this might take half the night. What the hell did you put your name and number on the list for? You know, and that's the people who put their name and their number on the list. How many people aren't even on a list, a 12-step list, call list like that? So if you're going on a 12-step call, you really should bring somebody. Twice on 12-step calls, I've had my life threatened. And once, the guy who we were 12-stepping almost died. I'll quick tell those stories. One of them was, we were taking this guy off to Happy Hills, you know, to get detoxed. We favor hospitalization for the befogged. And this guy was befogged, so we're getting him to detox. And I'm sitting in the back seat with him, and I'm buckled in. He's not buckled in. We're driving down Route 206 at about 60 miles an hour, and he decides to get out and go home. He opens the door, and we're doing 60 miles an hour, okay? I reach over. Luckily, I'm buckled in, okay? I reach over, and I grab his belt, and I pull him back in. You know, we pull over the road, like, oh, my God, you know, it's this nightmare thing. He was, you know, that he probably would have died. If not, he would have been some road pizza, this guy. 60 miles an hour. Another time, this is my first ever 12-step call. Okay? Phone rings. It's this guy. Chris, I'm in trouble. You know, it's like about 11 o'clock at night. I go, what's the matter? He goes, Satan's talking to me. I'm like, important warning sign. I go, okay, how much coke are you doing? You know, because I know that there's a correlation between Satan and cocaine. And I know enough about that. I know it's an outside issue, but, you know, I have some experience. Anyway, I go, how many? You know, he goes, I did 5 grams. I'm like, oh my God, he's chirping like a squirrel. Okay, we'll be right over. And I get my buddy and we drive over and this guy, like, when he's not doing cocaine, he's like weightlifting. Okay, the guy's like 400 pounds. He looks like Hulk Hogan's bigger brother. Okay. And he gets in the back seat, and, you know, I'm 6 months sober. You know, let's get him to Happy Hills. Let's get him to Happy Hills. And we're driving him, and so I'm driving, and my guys, and I go, is Satan still talking to you? And he goes, yeah. He goes, he's telling me to kill people. And then he goes, especially people that are trying to help me. I've looked in that mirror so many times. Made for a nervous ride to Happy Hills. Oh, a poor guy. Now listen, a lot of times they don't treat us appropriately. I mean, this guy really needed to be detoxed and then really clinically assessed by people who understand addictive illness. That did not happen. He went to Greystone Hospital, you know, and came out after 6 months like Jack Nicholson at the end of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, like, you know, drooling, you know, bottles of pills. It was just a mess. He's better now, though. Another time, I'm down in North Carolina, and I've got an old meeting book, and I go to the wrong place, right? I go to this place that's supposed to be the cup of water, you know. They got clubhouses down in North Carolina. That's where you go to meetings, and it had moved. Okay, so what happened was, I realized we're in the wrong place, and so. What happened was this guy comes pulling up, and he's in the wrong place too. He's got an old meeting book, and it's a guy and his girlfriend, and we realize that we're both at the wrong place, and we don't know where the new place is. You know, there's no signs. We don't. So I say, look, you know, he's brand new. He's just out of prison for his 12th DUI. That's also an important warning sign. So I go, listen, let's go have coffee down at Denny's. We'll talk. You know, I'm looking. 12-step opportunity. You know, this will be great. So, you know, we're talking a little bit with him. Now, he was with the most critically intense codependent I've ever seen in my life. I didn't understand codependence till I saw this woman. She was feeding like a vampire on his dysfunction. Yeah, you know, he always gets in trouble. He's going to prison. You know, he beats people up. You know, and she's like feeding off of this crazed dysfunction. I'm like, man, this is not good. We get to Denny's and we sit down, and it says in this book, you know, hit them with the truth. Hit them with the truth. You can tell them the truth because you have a solution. So I start hitting them with step one. Now, you probably have a obsession of the mind that's going to continue. You're going to, if you don't recover, you're going to continue to have more DUIs and more problems, more trouble. You know, you end up killing you. And he goes, stop, whoa, stop. I usually kill people that give me bad news. This guy's right out of prison, okay? I'm like, waitress, check, you know. I'm going to... 12-step work is supposed to be good for me. You know, it's not supposed to kill me. So anyway, you know, I've had some experiences with this wet drunk. I've had a lot of experience with wet drunk work. Okay, there's a couple of things you need to know. What I do is I keep airline bottles of booze. They're perfect for a 12-step call. Listen, a lot of times the detoxes in this area, they're loath to take us. That may be their business. You know, there's one right up the street from here that I wouldn't go to again if you put a gun to my head, because I've been screwed by them so many times, driving somebody there, and then they just trying to figure out why not to let him in. Oh, well, he's got red hair, and you said he had brown. You know, we can't let him in. You know, it's insane. So sometimes you have to be able to give them alcohol. Oh, my God, bring that up as a topic at the next closed-minded discussion meeting you go to. But what I'll do is I'll have the little airline bottles, because, you know, they don't spill like a quart of whiskey in your back seat. You know, it's only a little thing. I also bring garbage bags. Why? Because I learned the hard way by not having one. You should have seen the Corinthian leather after that one. So you learn these things. You know, you need to become proficient at these. Listen, you know, with the problems with insurance, with the problems of detoxes closing down, with all of these problems, we need to get back on the ball. We need to get, you know, for the longest time, we handed all of our problems off to the professionals. Well, they're getting tired of it, you know, and there's not enough money for it. So we need to start coming back to terms with being able to do it ourselves. So, you know, pay attention to this. If somebody says, hey, would you like to go on a 12-step call? There's really only one answer. Yes. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. If you've never done a 12-step call, there's always a first time. So often we don't do things because we've never done them before. Oh, I can't sponsor. I've never sponsored. Well, you know, you're going to kill the first three or four people you sponsor anyway. You might as well get it over with. You know? Get about the business, you know? You're probably going to kill the first two or three 12 steps you go on, too. So, but you got to get in the game, you know? So get in the game. Here we go. Tell him about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. This is an identification process. I got a call from my first wife, the one that left me when I needed her most. And but I've worked through that. And she said, you know, my brother's in trouble. Would you go see him? He's up in Hackettstown General. You know, her brother, she moved to Colorado, but, you know, a lot of her family still. And he drank himself to the point where he bloated up like the Michelin Man. I didn't know it at the time, but he had like congestive heart failure and liver and pancreas damage. And he was really far gone, and he was in the hospital. And I figure, okay, I'm going to do this old school. There was a way that Bill and Bob did this back in the day, and that's what I'm going to do with this guy. And I called up all of my crew. And I said, okay, you be at the hospital at 3 o'clock. You be at the hospital at 5 o'clock. You be at the hospital at 7 o'clock. And what I did was I packed about 3 days full of guys going in to the hospital to tell their story. Okay, I say, do it right out of the chapter working with others. The guy got about seven people in. He finally goes, okay, just stop, please. Stop sending them. Just stop sending them. I'll go to those meetings with you guys. I'm in. Okay? And he started coming to our group, and he started working with a sponsor, going through the steps. You know, this stuff, you know, we look at this stuff and we say, that's just not going to work today. That just doesn't fit into my schedule. My personality is just not like that. Well, the hell with all that stuff. Try this stuff. These guys had some really serious experience on the firing lines like we just don't even understand. And they learned some best practices. And those best practices were put into this book. I've never been disappointed when I used this as an operational manual. I've been disappointed a lot of times when I wang it. You know what I mean? Well, I think I'll do this. And it blows up in my face. But if I do what it says in here, it doesn't blow up in my face. It's very, very predictable. The outcomes are very predictable when you use this. You're not going to get to everybody. Everybody's not going to respond. But there's going to be a higher level of response, positive response, than if you just wing it or if you just wait for something to happen. When he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were. Tell him how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of a spree. That means you have to understand the first step. Probably 80% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous today don't understand what the first step is. This mental obsession, the strange mental blank spot, you know, that subtle form of insanity that precedes the first drink, that doesn't allow you to access sound reasoning and good judgment. You end up drunk. Explain that to the guy. If they've had it, they're going to identify with it. They're going to say, no one's ever meant, no one's ever said that to me before. You know, that's usually the reaction. We suggest that you do this as we have done on the chapter on alcoholism. If he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, you think they mean if you are satisfied that if he's a real alcoholic, you think that's what they're saying? We need to qualify these people. Today, in current contemporary AA, everybody is welcome at the door. We assume that if you're walking through the door, you belong. All right? That's not what this book says. This book basically wants us to be sure that we're helping an alcoholic. Why? Really, basically, just because our time is valuable. Our experience is valuable. We can be wasting that time if we're working with somebody that doesn't want help, or we're working with someone who's not an alcoholic. So let's make sure those people are alcoholic. Now, if there's some drug addicts or some other people in different 12-step fellowships, the same thing goes true to you. Make sure that they're a drug addict or a crack addict or a food addict or whatever before you try to help them. Because if you're a crack addict and you're trying to work with an alcoholic, they're going to be really put off by how quick you move. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, what is going on with this guy? There needs to be that deep identification. Like, I've been where you are. I know what it's like. And I'm not there anymore. And I'm here to help you, because by helping you, it's going to help me. That's the message that, you know, we have to be transmitting. Show them from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of willpower. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him possibly he can if he is not too alcoholic. But insist if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover on his own. Remember the scale of alcoholism. You may be on a 12-step call with a heavy drinker. I mean, don't absolutely assume that they're alcoholic. Maybe, the threat of a doctor or falling in love or another sufficient reason, this person can stop or moderate. Look for experiences where he really tried or she really tried and didn't. And then you're getting closer to this person's powerless. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of body and mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who never realize their predicament. And that's true today. And you know what? There are a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous that are doomed because they don't realize their predicament, because we're not sharing it with them. Because at a first step meeting, we tell our war stories. We don't talk about the conditions of body and mind. We talk about the external dysfunction that was going on in our lives when we were drinking. You know, that is really wrong. I have taken more shit in first step meetings for talking about this stuff. There'll be six people, telling their war stories, and then they'll get to me. And I'll basically explain to the person how qualification for alcoholism is done. And I'm a know-it-all. But I got to tell you, I'm probably the only person that's shared information with that guy that they can use. You know, he might not have he might not have lost the 747. You know what I mean? He might not have killed three families, you know, and ended up in the mental hospital. He could be sitting there going, these people are really nice, but they're awful fucked up. You know? So, you know, let's shift our perspective a little bit. Let's see how you know, the newcomer needs to be approached, the information that needs to be transmitted. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. The spiritual feature. What's the spiritual feature? That God can and will if he were sought. Oh, don't talk about God. You might scare him away. Talk about the power. Talk about the spirit if you need to. But you can't not talk about the ultimate solution. Why hide the ultimate solution? You can't say to a diabetic, well, I'm not going to talk about the insulin. You know? He does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself and that he live by spiritual principles. Okay? Living by spiritual principles, that's not so scary to an alcoholic. I kind of was trying to live by spiritual principles. I really was when I was drunk and, you know, causing crimes. Everything. I was trying to live by spiritual principles. I wanted to live by spiritual principles. If you asked me what my intentions were, they would have been to live by spiritual principles. If you would have looked at my bookshelf and seen all the Herman Hesse and Alan Watts and Carlos Castaneda and all that stuff, you would have probably concluded that I'm going in a spiritual direction, you know. But I couldn't access that stuff. I didn't have the power. I was being driven, you know, by fear, by resentment, by alcoholism. I was just being driven around, just completely out of control like a tornado. So talking about living along spiritual lines, that's not gonna deter anybody. It shouldn't deter anybody. I mean, you know, we don't have the Watchtower magazine with us, you know what I mean? We're talking about our own experience. To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. It's an important sentence. Remember, we need the faith that works. We don't just need faith. We need the faith that works for us to be able to stay sober and to get to recovered. So it must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action.
They told me it's a selfish program.
Who told you it's a selfish program? I want to know. What moron told you that it was a selfish program? You know, what treatment process guilty of malpractice told you that it's a selfish program? What lazy bastard that never did anything for anybody else in their whole lives told you it was a selfish program? Okay? Maybe we need to be a little bit selfish with our time early on because we need to get to some meetings and we need to work with some alcoholics. Okay, I'll give you that. But this whole program is about becoming selfless. Self is what kills us. Being selfish is what kills us. Why are they telling us it's a selfish program? That's insane. That's how far away from the principles in this book Alcoholics Anonymous has been allowed to go. Because so many old-timers dropped the ball. Or so many newcomers were coming in and the old-timers said, I can't take this therapy crap anymore. I'm out of here. You know? They did a study, I don't know, about 15 years ago. Where do all the old-timers go? And you know what they found out? A great percentage of them go to house meetings, you know. Fudd and Charlie and Harry get together and say, let's get the hell out of this meeting. You know, the guy with the purple mohawk is just driving me crazy. And they start a meeting at their house, You know, I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that that's what's happened. And a lot of times it's their own fault because they're not acting like trusted servants. They're not acting like elder statesmen, and they're not trying to help keep the continuity of the meeting and the direction of the meeting going in the right way. Outline the program of action. Okay. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, the fourth step. How you straightened out your past, the ninth step. And why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. How are you going to do that if you haven't done it? How are you going to outline to somebody how you did the fourth and the fifth step and the eighth and the ninth step if you haven't done it? Okay. You want to be the most effective 12-stepper. You need to have this experience so that you can share this experience. One of the things that they were doing to me was they were encouraging me not to drink in my first 2 years. Chris, just don't drink. You know, Chris, just don't drink. They're encouraging me not to drink. And that's good. But it's the enemy the best. The best is to offer someone a program of recovery that'll bring about freedom from alcohol. Immunity from alcohol. Why encourage me not to drink when I can't do that and not offer me a program? So what we need to do is we need to have our own experience with these steps to be able to do this. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you've perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. That is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. Your candidate may give reasons why he need not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of a drastic house cleaning. You know, he may rebel at the thought of pay the money back. I wouldn't have stole it all if I knew I was going to have to pay it back. Do not contradict such views. Tell him you once felt as he does, but you doubt whether you would have made much progress had you not taken action. I know how you feel. I know how you feel. But, you know, I probably wouldn't have made it if I didn't do my amends. I probably wouldn't have made it if I didn't do my fourth and fifth step. On your first visit, tell them about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of stuff on the first visit. If he is not interested in your solution, if he expects for you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees or a drama coach, anybody in here been put in the position of a drama coach? You know, let me tell you what's going on today. Oh, I'm checking in. Right, Peter? Checking in. Oh, you may have to drop such a person. Okay, we're not doing anybody any favors by allowing this kind of stuff to go on. If they're not willing, if we can't be convincing, if we can't, through our own sharing of our own experience, if we can't be convincing enough for them to go through the steps with us or at least begin the step process with us, we're supposed to drop them. There's one requirement for membership to sit in a seat of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a desire to stop drinking. But we have requirements for sponsorship. We do. And one of them is they have to be willing to at least begin the step process with us, or we're not supposed to bother with them. Thank you very much. You know, I'm really not the person to work with. I really only know one way to recover from alcoholism. Maybe you can find somebody that'll be your drama coach. Now, maybe you'll find somebody that'll let you, you know, call them up at 11 o'clock at night every night, you know, going over the dysfunction du jour. That's wonderful. For the next 5 years, okay? Yeah. That's wonderful. I'm not the guy. God bless you. Go in peace. Here's my phone number if you ever change your mind and want someone to show you the recovery process for alcoholism. I'll do anything I can to help. I'm just not going to waste your time and mine letting you direct your own recovery when you're insane. If he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. So what do you need with you when you're going on a 12-step call? A book. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. Keep trying. Keep trying until you find somebody. This is how you develop the fellowship you crave. This is how you develop a host of friends. This is how you develop a world that's absolutely incredible. Some of us have started home groups, and the home groups have started by us taking people through the steps. Now we have like a crew, you know, and we start a meeting, and the meeting grows. Right, Peter? It's absolutely an amazing experience. You do not want to miss that, but it takes a little bit of work. Suppose you're now making your second visit to a man. He's read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12-step recovery program. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision. The third step, down on your knees. I think we've heard that here this weekend. To tell his story, the fifth step. This doesn't really mean, you know, a life story. This means the fifth step stuff. But do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone else. We should not be proprietary with these people. We don't own them. Two things are going on in Alcoholics Anonymous today that I really disagree with because they go counter to the philosophy in this book. One of them is there are groups that are all about sponsorship authority and home group loyalty. And those are the ethics and the characteristics that you must exhibit to be accepted by these people. Okay? And you can have 20 years and your sponsor is still telling you, you know, when to cut the grass. That's not what this book is about. This book is about freedom. And to be beholden to a home group, that's not what we're supposed to do. We are supposed to be beholden to God and Alcoholics Anonymous. Our authority must be with God. Our loyalty must be with Alcoholics Anonymous and suffering alcoholics. That's what this book is telling us to do. So if you happen to be in a group, you know, that's hierarchical and, you know, the orders come down on high for what you should do, you know, and oh, we heard you went and took a commitment in another home group. You know, I mean, you may want to look at that. That's all I'm saying. I don't judge. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day, this says, okay? The telephone may jangle. The wife, you know, the wife may be frantic and think she's being ignored. Interruptions to your business. Interruptions to many nights of sleep. Great interference with your pleasures. These are commitments that we need to make to ourselves. This is about being selfless. All right, putting yourself out there, having a life of invitation, a life of compassion and service, and a life of opportunity, this is what we need to do. If the phone call comes, you can do this. If the phone rings, oh no, I bet you it's that idiot. You know, he's probably drinking again. God damn it. But when you pick up the phone, you know what you have to say? I'll be right over. You know, unfortunately. Both you and the new man must walk day to day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. That's absolutely true. I hope I've challenged and not annoyed most of the people who are listening here today to maybe... Maybe be encouraged to do a little bit better job with the directives in this chapter.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.